Very few Uzbek scholars have the possibility to come to the West and Western scholars to go and work in Uzbekistan. So usually our knowledge is limited to kind of superficial assessment of the strategic location of Uzbekistan and its relationship to Afghanistan and so on. Or we have a few advocacy groups that continue to work and to try to get information about the political situation. And of course, the re-election of Islam Karimov last week was an example on when the advocacy community can be a little bit communicative about Uzbekistan. Otherwise, we are relatively in a kind of silent situation toward the country. So the goal of this Uzbek initiative and of this workshop was really to try to reopen the road for knowledge and for dialogue, and that the first of a series of workshops that we will try to have on Uzbekistan. We will have a second one in June, unfortunately not here, but in Sweden. We will have 2 days devoted to the evolution of Uzbek societies, and that will bring together mostly Western scholars, mostly anthropologists who have been working in the countries, especially in the 90s and the 2000s, early 2000s, and we will do a kind of assessment of what we were able to do at that time that we are not able to do anymore now. And here for this workshop, what we wanted to do is, in fact, to give the floor to a new generation of Uzbek voices. And as you can see, the majority, if not all our speakers, are, in fact, Uzbek. And I think that's very important that we stop always having our own narrative on Uzbekistan, but we give them the floor and we listen to what they have to say. And we really have a new generation of Uzbek experts and of Uzbek activists, social activists that try to really maintain a dialogue with the different communities and with the homeland. And many of our speakers are coming from all over the world, which really give you an idea on how the Uzbek community has become very internationalized. This last year, we have people coming from Europe, from Australia, and from Japan. Many of our speakers are representative of the Uzbek diaspora in the U.S. You can enjoy some Uzbek craft there, in so to see how the Uzbek diaspora try to maintain a cultural tradition of Uzbekistan even abroad. So now I would like to give the floor to the chair of our first panel, and I wanted to really thank him in particular. Professor Angst, professor of geography at Oklahoma State University, has really been a key element in our knowledge on Uzbekistan, especially in the 90s when there was really very few specialists able to bring the Western attention to the country. Rule was really one of them that contributed to make this country known in the West. So it's my great pleasure to give him now the floor for this first panel.
Thank you so much, Marlene. That's very kind words, and I appreciate being included in the new generation, particularly at my age. I'm not going to spend a lot of time introducing our speakers this morning. In the interest of time, we have biographies on all of them. If you didn't pick one up, they're available over there on the desk at the side of the room. We do have a very interesting panel today. I will hold our speakers each to about 15 minutes or so, since we have four. It's my understanding our first speaker will speak in Russian with translation. So I will grant him just a bit more time, since there will be some interaction with the translation there. So without further ado, let me introduce Kamoladin Rabinov, who has a very timely topic. He will be speaking on the succession question and the stability of the Uzbek political system after Islam Karimov's decision to stay for another term. Kamoladin, пожалуйста.
Спасибо большое.
Thank you very much.
Сперва позвольте поздравить тех, кто исповедует христианство. Вчера была Пасха. Поздравить с Пасхой.
At the beginning of my speech, I wanted to thank you to all the Christians who celebrate Easter. It was a Christian holiday yesterday.
И merci beaucoup pour Marlène, pour votre invitation à Washington. Je suis la première fois en Washington. C'est spécialement pour Marlène en français. Значит, я хочу рассказать о своем видении в вопросе преемственности власти и стабильности политической системы Узбекистана после решения Каримова остался еще один срок.
I wanted to talk about about Karimov's situation in the country after Karimov decided to stay for another term.
Примерно год-полтора назад до выборов было понятно, что Каримов не собирается уходить и решил остаться еще на один срок правления.
About a year and a half ago, before the election, it was clear that Karimov was not going to go away, and he was staying for another term.
Существовали несколько факторов, которые указывали, что Каримов останется.
There were several factors that indicated Karimov would stay.
Это бережное сохранение и соблюдение паритетного баланса власти между премьером Шавкатом Мирзиевым и первым вице-премьером Рустамом Азимовым, острота проблемы дела Гульнары Каримовой, острота геополитической ситуации вокруг Центральной Азии и Узбекистана, желание верхушки политической элиты Узбекистана сохранить статус-кво и другие причины.
It is a careful preservation and compliance with the balance of power between the Prime Minister Shavkat Mirziyoyev and First Deputy Minister Rustam Azimov. The severity of the Gulnara issue, the unique geopolitical situation around Central Asia and Uzbekistan, the desire of the political elite of Uzbekistan to preserve the status quo and others.
В январе 2015 года Каримову исполнилось 77 лет. Он уже во власти Узбекистана более четверти века, то есть 25 лет. Пережил несколько острейших кризисов власти.
In January 2015, Karimov turned 77 years old. He has already been in power in Uzbekistan for more than 25 years. That's quarter of a century, and has experienced several acute crises of power.
No. Его биофизиологические ресурсы уже обуславливают отдых и покой. Эта потребность будет только нарастать.
His physical condition already requires relaxation and rest, and this will only increase.
Известно, что по инициативе Каримова в 2011 году была инициирована очередная конституционная реформа власти, в результате которой срок полномочий президента республики был заново сокращен с 7 на 5 лет.
It is known that in 2011, at the behest of Karimov, constitutional reform was enacted and reduced the term of the office for the president from 7 to 5 years.
Тем самым следующие выборы президента, если они состоятся в свой срок, должны быть проведены в марте 2020 года.
The next presidential election, if they take place on schedule, it will take place in March of 2020.
Однако нынешний, четвертый по сроку правления Каримова, скорее всего будет характеризоваться как завершающийся.
However, Каримов's current fourth term in office is likely to be the last one.
Ислам Каримов, как опытный политик, не может не думать о стабильности выстроенной им политической системы, преемственности власти и курса внутренней и внешней политики Узбекистана после своего правления.
Ислам Каримов, as an experienced politician, cannot help but think about the stability of the political system constructed by him, the continuity of power and state of domestic and foreign policy in Uzbekistan after his reign.
Перед Каримовым до сих пор стоял две пути реализации преемственности власти. Первый путь – так называемый эволюционно-подконтрольный, когда Каримов передал бы верховную власть своему преемнику под личным контролем и, находясь в одной из ключевых постов страны, скажем, на посту председателя Сената, лично участвовал бы в укреплении власти преемника как минимум 2-3 года.
After Islam Karimov, there are two ways to ensure the continuity of power. The first way, the so-called evolutionary controlled method, would involve Karimov granting supreme power to his successor under his personal supervision in one of the key posts of the country, the chairman of the Senate, and being personally involved in the strengthening the power of his successor for at least 2-3 years.
Второй путь, который условно можно назвать рискованно неопределенный, когда Карим будет находиться у верховной власти до последних физических ресурсов и тем самым не может полноценно участвовать в формировании новой власти Узбекистана.
The second way, which can be called a risk undefined, would involve Karimov holding supreme power to the last of his physical ability, making him unable to fully participate in the formation of the new government of Uzbekistan.
Karimov решил остаться еще на один срок, и тем самым, пока ситуация обуславливает второй вариант развития событий.
Karimov has decided to stay for another term, which places the government of the Uzbekistan in the second scenario.
Вместе с тем думается, что нынешний четвертый срок Каримова будет решающим в обнародовании и укреплении позиции своего потенциального или реального преемника.
However, I think that the current fourth term of Karimov will be crucial in publicizing and strengthening the position of his successor.
Понятие «преемник» в современной политической мысли Узбекистана находится в начальной стадии формирования.
The concept of successor in the modern political thought of Uzbekistan is in the initial stage of its formation.
Данное понятие в сознании узбекистанцев вошел из реалии Российской Федерации, когда в 2000 году Ельцин объявил своим преемником Путина.
The concept has entered the consciousness of Uzbeks from the realities of the Russian Federation in 2000, when Boris Yeltsin announced his successor would be Vladimir Putin.
В современном Узбекистане не только отсутствует правовая база для реализации преемственности государственного курса или преемственности власти.
In today's Uzbekistan, there is not only one legal basis for implementation of the continuity of the state policy or continuity of power, but also even at the level of political culture, there is no emphasis either on the continuity of power or public policy.
Но также даже на уровне политической культуры не развиты ценности преемственности власти и государственного курса.
It is noteworthy that there is no agreement.
Но также, даже на уровне политической культуры.
Also in the political culture.
Не развиты ценности преемственности власти.
There is no emphasis either on the continuity of power or policy, public policy.
Примечательно то, что даже вокруг термина «преемник» на узбекском языке в обществе нет согласия.
It is noteworthy that there is no agreement about the term successor in the language of Uzbek society.
Да. Чаще всего используется термин «орындаш», «орынбасар» и «варус».
The more often used terms are replacement, deputy, or heir.
Да. Согласно Конституции Узбекистана, президент страны – настолько мощный государственный орган, даже на формально-юридическом уровне отсутствуют какие-либо механизмы сдерживания или контроля деятельности президента.
According to the Constitution of Uzbekistan, the office of the president is so powerful, a state body, that even on a formal legal level, there are no mechanism to curb or control its activities.
Отсутствует институт импичмента.
There is no option of impeachment.
Президент является эпицентром государственности. Остальные ветви власти не только не способны сдерживать президента, но и разными обходными способами формируются в результате деятельности президента.
The president is the epicenter of the statehood, and the other branches of the government are not only unable to restrain the president, but also form a different workaround as a result of the president's power.
Да. Тем самым, личность, политическое мышление и поведение будущего президента не только для узбекистанцев, но и в региональной политике имеет судьбоносное значение.
Thus, the personality, political thinking and behavior of the future president is of crucial importance not only for Uzbekistan, but for the entire region as well.
Изучение и анализ тех факторов, которые будут обуславливать выявление потенциального или реального преемника Каримова, имеет большое значение.
The study and analysis of the factors that will decide Karimov's successor has great significance.
Существует ряд факторов и обстоятельств, которые могут подсказать о контурах выбора Каримова своего преемника.
There are a number of factors and circumstances that may suggest a general outline of his choice, of Karima's choice.
Первый фактор. Это стиль мышления и принятие решений, формировавшийся склонности Каримова.
The first factor is the style of thinking and decision making and how much they align with the pattern created by Karimov.
Каримов достаточно предсказуемый политик.
Karimov is a quite predictable politician.
Да. Его сознание, мышление и поведение целиком и полностью пропитан осторожностью, недоверием, страхом потери власти с соответствующими последствиями.
His consciousness and thinking and behavior are steeped in caution, mistrust and fear of losing power.
Поэтому для принятия правильного решения он мучительно думает. Иногда месяцами и годами.
Therefore, to make a right decision, he painfully thinks over sometimes for months and or years.
При принятии решения его терзают сомнения и опасения.
While making decision, he is plagued by doubt and fears.
А иногда в особо критических обстоятельствах он инстинктивно решает все за считанные секунды и закрывает вопрос.
And sometimes, particularly in critical circumstances, he instinctively decides everything in a few seconds and closes the question.
Да. Каримов – человек, который считает, что внутренняя интуиция, предчувствие – это самый верный советник при принятии важнейших решений, в особенности в подборе кадров для управления страной.
Ислам Каримов – is a man who believes that his inner intuition is the right advisor when making important decisions, particularly in the selection of personnel for the management of the country.
Да. То есть он больше доверяет своей интуиции и предчувствиям, нежели закрытым информационным и аналитическим запискам, выводам советников.
In this, he has been known to trust his hunches rather than secret information, analysis, analytical notes or the consciousness of his advisors.
Yeah. Каримов – политик сформировавшийся характера, и он уже не будет меняться. Стиль и мотивация принятия решений останется неизменным.
Karimov's politics shaped his character, and he will not change. His style of decision making and motivation will remain fixed in place.
Иными словами, Каримов как бюрократ, сформировавшийся в номенклатурной системе бывшего Союза и руководивший в Госплане, все свои дела тщательно планирует.
In other words, Islam Karimov is a bureaucrat with a nomenclatura system he formed in the former Soviet Union and which led to the State Planning Commission. Plans of all of his business and businesses very carefully.
Да. Тем самым, решение Каримова по выбору преемника не будет спонтанным и неожиданным, а будет достаточно предсказуемым.
Therefore, his choice for successor will not be spontaneous or unexpected. It will be quite predictable.
Да. Второй фактор. Политическая система и характеристика общественных отношений Узбекистана имеют свою специфику.
Second, the political system and the characteristics of public relations in Uzbekistan have their own specific requirements.
Традиционализм и авторитарная иерархичность общественно-политической коммуникации исключают возможность выбора Каримовым в преемника тех лиц, которые не располагают следующими ресурсами.
Traditionalism and authoritarian hierarchical social and political communications eliminate the possibility of the selecting a successor to Karimov who does not have the following resources.
То есть, какие ресурсы? Многолетний опыт работы в высших эшелонах власти.
It is many years of experience in the higher echelon of power.
Людские ресурсы, команда из доверенных и заинтересованных в получении или сохранении властных позиций лиц.
Human resources, a team of trusted individuals with large financial assets who are interested in obtaining and maintaining a position of power.
Большие финансовые ресурсы.
And big financial resources.
Иначе говоря, в современном Узбекистане за власть конкурируют не идеи, и компетенции по управлению без принуждения, а конкурируют люди с ресурсами и со способностью искусственного авторитарного управления.
In other words, in modern Uzbekistan, they are competing for power, not the ideas and expertise to manage without cohesiveness, and compete with the resources and people with the ability to maintain authoritarian control.
Да. Потому что в политической элите Узбекистана сформировано представление, что в ближайшие десятилетия в Узбекистане не будет социально-экономической и социокультурной ситуации, позволяющей управлять страной без принуждения.
It's because political elite have formed the view that the in the coming decade Uzbekistan will not be in a social economic that allows the to be the run country without any cohesiveness.
В-третьих, думается, что приоритет личностных и профессиональных качеств, предъявляемых Каримовым для своего преемника, будет выглядеть примерно так.
Lastly, I think that the priority of the personal and professional quality requirements for Karimov's successor will look approximately like this.
Первый. Максимальная преданность лично Каримова и его семьи, что означает обеспечение безопасности бывшего президента и его близких.
First, maximum personal dedication to Karimov and his family, which will ensure the security of the former president and his family.
Второй. Умение удержать и укреплять полученные власти.
Second, the ability to retain and strengthen power once it's received.
Третий. Сохраняя авторитарный стиль управления, умение проводить той дозой реформ, которые необходимы для живучести политического режима. Это третий.
Third, maintaining an authoritarian style of government and the ability to carry out the reforms required for the persistence of the political system.
И, наконец, четвертый. Каримову важно, чтобы его преемник продолжал его внешнеполитический курс, особенно на постсоветском пространстве и Центральноазиатском регионе.
And the last, it is important for Karimov that his successor will continue his foreign policy, especially in the former Soviet Union and Central Asia.
Исходя из вышесказанного, Каримов уже давно наметил для себя потенциальных кандидатов на преемника.
Based on what has been said before, Karimov has long maintained a few potential candidates for his successor.
Это премьер-министр страны с 2003 года Шавкат Мирзиёев.
It is a prime minister since 2003, Шавкат Мирзиёев.
И первый заместитель премьера, руководитель финансово-экономического блока правительства Рустам Азимов.
And head of the financial economic block of the government, Рустам Азимов.
Проявившая в 2008-2011 годах высокая политическая активность и публичные амбиции на верховную власть Гульнара Каримова, старшая дочь Каримова, уже вышла из числа потенциальных кандидатов на пост президента и даже успела стать обвиняемой в уголовных делах в нескольких европейских странах и осужденной в Узбекистане.
Manifested in 2008-2011, high political activity and public ambitions of the sovereignty Gulnara Karimova, Karimov's elder daughter, is already out of consideration for the presidency and has even managed to be accused in criminal cases in several European countries and convicted in Uzbekistan.
Думается, что после допущенных ей крупных ошибок, как внутри страны, так и за ее пределами, а также отсутствие согласия внутри семьи Каримова вокруг ее амбиций, кажется, что у нее уже не будет возможности стать преемником своего отца.
It seems that after the after she admitted major mistakes both domestic and abroad, as well as the lack of agreement with the Karimov family around her ambition, that she will not have the opportunity to become her father's successor.
Исходя из вышесказанного, представляется, что интересно проводить краткий сравнительный анализ ресурсов двух потенциальных преемников Каримова, премьера Мирзиёева и зампремьера Азимова.
Based on the foregoing, it's interesting to conduct a brief comparative analysis of the resources of the two potential successors to Karimov, the Prime Minister and First Deputy Mirzaev, Premier Azimov.
Но я только дошел до половины доклада.
I'm in the middle of the...
Да. Шавкат Мирзиев, де-факто является четвертым, а де-юре третьим премьером страны.
Шавкат Мирзиев, де-факто fourth and де-юре the third prime minister of the country.
Ну, потому что в 1990-92 годах у нас был вице-президент Шукрулла Мирзаидов.
Because Шукрулла Мирзаидов used to be prime minister between 1990 and 1992.
Yeah. Находясь в должности премьера с 2003 года, он является абсолютным долгожителем на посту премьера.
Being in the position of prime minister since 2003, he can be seen as the having longevity.
К тому же, после конституционной реформы 2002 года власть премьера была существенно усилена. Он становится полноценным председателем правительства.
In addition, after constitutional reform in 2002, the government has been significantly enhanced by the prime minister. He has become the full-fledged prime minister.
А до этого председателем кабинета министров тоже являлся президент.
Before that, the chairman of the cabinet of ministers too is the president.
Примечательно, что в иерархии власти Узбекистана второе лицо по влиятельности, естественно, после президента, всегда находился в аппарате президента. Это был либо государственный советник по кадровым вопросам, либо советник по силовым ведомствам.
It is noteworthy that in the hierarchy of the Uzbek authorities, the second person of the influence after the president, of course, was always the state advisor to the president on the personnel matters or state advisor for law enforcement agencies.
Однако после назначения Мирзиёева премьером в течение года он становится вторым по влиятельности лицом в государстве.
However, after the appointment of the Prime Minister Shavkat Mirziyoyev, within a year he became the second most influential person in the state.
Да. Здесь не учитывается председатель СМБ по той причине, что специфика власти СМБ позволяет наблюдать за всеми, но в принятии повседневных решений, в том числе в назначении кадров, власть премьера более существенна.
This doesn't include the chairman of the National Security SNB on the grounds that the specific power SNB allows the chairman is to monitor all, but in making everyday decisions, including in the appointment of staff, the prime minister's power is essential.
Мирзиёев является главным куратором в республике в таких отраслях, как сельское хозяйство, региональное развитие. По согласованию с президентом назначает региональных и республиканских кадров хозяйственного, социально-экономического характера.
Мирзиёев is the chief curator of the republic in sectors such as agriculture and regional development, and consultation with the president appoints the regional and national cadre in the economic matters.
Достоверно известно, что Мирзиёев является одним из 6-8 ключевых чиновников, которые почти ежедневно бывают у Каримова.
It is known that Mirzaev is one of the 6-8 key officials who are contacted with Karimov on an almost daily basis.
В связи с пожилым возрастом Каримова и соответствующим снижением активности президента, доля реальных властных полномочий президента постепенно, но верно будет усиливаться.
Due to the age and the corresponding decrease in the activity of the president, the share of real authority of the president will be weakening or will be reduced.
Первый заместитель премьера, руководитель финансово-экономического блока Азимов, в близком окружении Каримова с самого расцвета независимости Узбекистана.
First deputy prime minister, the head of the financial economic block of the government, Рустам Азимов, has been in Каримов's inner circle since the formation of the independent state of Uzbekistan.
Когда Каримов доверил Азимову только что созданный и престижный финансовый учреждение в республике Национальный банк Узбекистана в 1991 году, Азимову было всего 33 года.
When Islam Karimov entrusted Azimov with this very important position in 1991, when Azimov was just 33 years old, he created the most prestigious financial institute in the country.
С тех пор роль Азимова в республике только возрастал.
Since then, the role of Azimov in the country has only grown.
В 1998 году он стал министром финансов.
In 1998 he became the finance minister.
В 2000 году заместителем премьера и министром макроэкономики.
In 2000 deputy prime minister and minister of macroeconomics.
В 2003 году министр экономики и заместитель премьера.
In 2003 the minister of economy and deputy prime minister.
В 2007 году первый заместитель премьера, министр финансов и руководитель финансово-экономического блока и внешнеэкономической связи республики.
In 2007 first deputy prime minister, finance minister and head of the financial economic block of foreign economic relations of the Republic of Uzbekistan.
В системе государственной власти Узбекистана Азимову отводятся определенные функции, которые Каримов доверяет только ему.
In the system of the government of Uzbekistan, Azimov has assigned certain functions which Karimov only entrusts him.
Да. Азимов – главный финансист и экономист республики, главный переговорщик Каримова с внешним миром, кризис-менеджер и координатор национальных программ.
He is the main financier and economist of the republic, the chief negotiator between Karimov and outside world, and the crisis manager and coordinator of national programs.
Достоверно известно, что Каримов ежедневно разговаривает с Азимовым и только с ним по воскресеньям встречается или созванивается по обсуждению рабочих дел.
It is known that Karimov talks daily with Azimov, even on Sundays, to discuss business issues.
Для сравнительного анализа ресурсов обоих высокопоставленных чиновников, в том числе степень доверия Каримова по отношению к ним, можно предложить следующие категории измерения.
For comparative analysis of the resources of both high-ranking officials, including the degree of the trust Karimov feels towards them, can offer the following categories of measurements.
Первый. Длительность нахождения в близком доверительном окружении Каримова.
First, length of stay in close trusted environment with Karimov.
Второй, ресурсы нормативно властных полномочий.
Second, resources of the regulatory authority.
Третий, общественные представления о компетентности.
Third, a public understanding of competence.
Четвертый, доверительные отношения с ключевыми силовиками.
Fourth, a trust relationship with the key security forces.
Пятый. Восприятие и ожидание семьи Каримова, в том числе оценки Татьяны Каримовой.
Fifth. The perception and expectation of the family of Islam Karimov, including personal assessment of Татьяны Каримова.
Теперь будем сравнивать.
Now we will be comparing.
По длительности нахождения в близком окружении Каримова позиции Рустама Азимова почти в два раза прочнее, чем у Шавката Мирзиёева.
For the duration of the stay in Karimov's inner circle, Rustam Azimov has held a position almost two times stronger than Shavkat Mirziyoyev.
Да. Период нахождения Азимова в окружении Каримова можно делить на две части.
The period when Azimov surrounded Karimov can be divided into two parts.
91-98 года, когда Азимов находился под наблюдением Каримова и проходил разного рода экзамены на компетентность и прочность.
The 1998 when he was under surveillance by Karimov and put through all sorts of tests of his competence.
И с 98 по ныне 17 лет период полного доверия и поручения масштабных властных полномочий.
And from 1998 till now, 17 years, the period of full-scale trust and order powers.
Мирзиёев тоже примерно с 92 года находился под вниманием Каримова. Он вошел в высшую политическую кухню Узбекистана в 2003 году с назначением на пост премьера.
Mirzaev has been under Karimov's care since about 1992, but he graduated to the highest strata of Uzbek politics in 2003 upon his appointment as prime minister.
С точки зрения нормативно-властных полномочий, естественно, Азимов формально подчиняется Мирзиёеву как главе правительства.
From the point of view of the regulatory authority, of course, Rustam Azimov formally submits to Shuhrat Mirziyoyev as the head of the government.
Да, если, к примеру, у Мирзиёева в республике все отрасли подконтрольны, кроме сферы внешней политики и сектора безопасности республики, а эти сектора находятся в прямом подчинении президента, то ответственный сектор Азимова ограничивается финансовыми и экономикой.
If Mirziyoyev is premier in the country in control of all industries except foreign policy and security sector of the country, these sectors are directly subordinate to the president. The Azimov's responsibilities are limited to finances and economy.
В силу нормативно-властных полномочий в компетенции премьера входит назначение повсеместно кадров по всей республике, что является фактором укрепления его влияния.
In the view of regulatory authorities, the competence of the Prime Minister, widespread personnel throughout the country, which is a factor strengthening his influence.
В условиях Узбекистана общественные представления о политическом деятеле не играют особо решающей роли.
In the conditions of the Uzbekistan, a public perception of the political does not play a decisive role.
А иногда выраженные позитивные отношения общественности к кому-либо во высшей власти, кроме президента, может вызвать негативное отношение президента или политической системы, поскольку это может быть расценено как попытка понравиться обществу.
And sometimes expressing a positive attitude towards the public and to someone in high authority can cause a negative response by the president or the political system, as it can be regarded as an attempt to please the public.
А такой в Узбекистане не может быть санкционировано высшей инстанцией.
But in Uzbekistan, this route will not grant you to the higher position.
Однако общественные представления о компетентности потенциального преемника имеют ценность при принятии Каримовым кадровых решений.
However, the public perception of the competence of a potential successor has value when Karimov is making personal decisions.
Каримов учитывает все, и тем более общественное мнение о выбираемом кадре.
Каримов takes everything into account, and even more so the public opinion of selectable frame.
В общественном мнении оба политика рассматриваются как компетентные топ-менеджеры своих профильных отраслей.
In public opinion, both politicians are seen as competent top managers of core industries.
Мирзиёев в сфере сельского хозяйства и регионального развития, а Азимов в сфере экономики и финансов.
Мирзиёев in agriculture and regional development, and Рустам Каримов, Азимов is economics and finance.
Вместе с тем, репутация Мирзиёева более противоречива, и эта противоречивость была приобретена в годы, когда он работал хакимом в двух областях страны, Жизак и Самарканде.
At the same time, the reputation of Мирзиёев is more controversial, and his inconsistency was occurred during the years when he worked as a hakim in the region Жизак и Самарканд.
Да. Стоит подчеркнуть, что до сих пор негативные слухи о деятельности Мирзиёева в регионах не подтверждены исчерпывающим образом.
It should be emphasized that there are still negative rumors about the activities of Мирзиёев in regions that were proved in detail.
Репутация Азимова менее противоречива, этому способствует природа его деятельности.
Азимов's reputation is less controversial, which is likely the result of the nature of his activity.
Узкий круг взаимодействия с общественностью, отсутствие публичности, также характер деятельности, когда ему не надо находиться в регионах, решая различные вопросы социального устройства.
A narrow range of interaction with the public, no publicity, the nature of the activities when you do not have to be in the region solving various social issues.
Именно поэтому в общественном мнении узбекистанцев, особенно у независимых журналистов и исследователей, сформировано представление о сравнительной либеральности Азимова и склонности к авторитаризму Мирзиёева, хотя подобные стереотипы достаточно аморфны.
That's why in public opinion of Uzbeks, especially independent journalists and researchers, have formed an idea about the relatively liberal Azimov and propensity toward authoritarian Mirzayev, author such a stereotype are rather unfounded.
Доверительные отношения возможных преемников с руководителями силовых структур, в первую очередь с руководством СНБ в Узбекистане, имеют особое значение и считаются особо ценным активом в системе ресурсов усиления властных полномочий.
Trust relationship of possible successes with the leaders of powerful structure, primarily with the leadership of SNB of Uzbekistan, are of particular importance and are considered a very valuable asset in the system resources to gain positive position of power.
Одна страница остается, так что ускоряю. Известно, что власть Узбекистана особо, власть в Узбекистане особо закрытый клуб, и поступающие оттуда информации могут сформировать лишь частичные представления о реальности.
It is known that power in Uzbekistan, particularly with the private club and coming out of information, can form only a partial view of reality.
Вместе с тем, информации о взаимоотношениях ключевых чиновников Узбекистана, их взаимные симпатии или антипатии, часто просачиваются во внешний мир.
However, information about the relationship between key officials in Uzbekistan, their mutual likes and dislikes, often seep into an outside world.
Модель выстраивания взаимоотношений Мирзиёева и Азимова с политической элитой Узбекистана значительно отличается.
The relationship model between Mirziyoyev and Azimov with the political elite of Uzbekistan are very different.
У Мирзиёева больше складывается система паутины в центре взаимоотношений, в которой находится Каримов, но с подчеркнутой попыткой с остальными наладить максимально доверительные дипломатичные отношения.
Mirziyoyev possesses a more complex web system with the Karimov at the center, but with exaggerated attempts to establish a relationship of trust with the rest of the elite.
Достоверно известно, что давление со стороны СНБ больше ощущает Азимов и его близкие.
It is known that pressure from the СНБ is felt more by Рустам Азимов and his family.
Если будет время, я могу потом уточнить, что я имею в виду. В этом давлении роль Каримова двоякая.
In maintaining,
в этом давлении роль Каримова двоякая.
The pressure of role of the Karimov two-sided.
Да. Президент каждый раз спасает Азимова, но без его одобрения это давление изначально не состоялись бы.
President tries to save Karimov, Азимов.
Время от времени давление со стороны силовиков воспроизводится и по отношению Мирзиёева. Эти давления призваны выполнить конкретные политические функции, в том числе усилить преданность Каримову.
From time to time, pressure from the security forces are used against Mirziyoyev. These pressures are designed to perform a specific political function, including strengthening loyalty to Karimov.
И, наконец, роль большой семьи Каримова в принятии им решения о преемнике год за годом будет стремительно нарастать.
Finally, the role of the big family Islam Karimov in his decision about successor year after year will rapidly increase.
Стоит уточнить, что членами большой семьи являются не только Татьяна Каримова, дочери и другие родственники, но и особо приближенные чиновники, доверительно проработавшиеся с президентом долгие года.
It is necessary to clarify that the members of the big extended family is not only Татьяна Каримова, the daughter, and other relatives, but especially close officials confined worked with the president for many years.
Во-первых, вопрос преемника – это не только вопрос стабильности политической системы, но и вопрос безопасности семьи.
First of all, the issue of the successor is not just a question of the stability of the political system, but also an issue of security for Karimov's family.
Во-вторых, достоверно известно, что Каримов учтиво относится к мнению Татьяны Каримовой, хотя она, Татьяна Каримова, всячески избегает всякой публичности.
It is known that Karimov politely defers to the opinion of Татьяна Каримова, although she avoids all kinds of publicity.
Тем самым, что думают о двух возможных преемниках, это важно, но пока об этом нам ничего не известно.
То есть, he thinks about the two possible successors. This is important, but so far this is not known.
Карим продлил свой мандат до марта 2020 года, и теперь одним из главных задач его нынешнего срока – окончательный выбор преемника и усиление его позиции с параллельным снижением возможного сопротивления оппонентов избранника.
Каримов has extended his mandate until March 2020, and the selection of the strong successor who will be able to defeat any resistance from the opponent is now one of the main objectives of his current term.
Это означает, что всякие кадровые перестановки в высших эшелонах власти, особенно если это напрямую касается премьера и его первого заместителя, будет указывать на планы Каримова о преемнике.
This means that any personal changes in the high echelon of power, especially if it directly concerns the prime minister and his first deputy.
Примерно с 17-18 годов вакуум власти, обусловленный снижением активности Каримова, будет нарастать.
Approximately from 2017-2018, the power vacuum caused by the decreasing activity of Islam Karimov will grow in size.
И не исключено, что в зависимости от степени вакуума перед политической системой возникнет вопрос, что делать, чтобы заполнить вакуум власти и обеспечить стабильность политической системы.
And it is possible, depending on the degree of vacuum in front of the political system, that this question will arise.
Возможно, тогда в Узбекистане возникнет такой модель власти, где в центре формально управляющей страны останется президент, который уже играет скорее символический и консолидирующий роль, а в его окружении возникнет настолько суперсильные чиновники, что каждый из которых будет самостоятельно управлять своими секторами, максимально избегая столкновений.
Perhaps then in Uzbekistan there is such a model of power where the center is formally run by the president, playing a more symbolic and consolidated role, and his in entourage a few superpower officials, which of them will manage their own sector while avoiding collusion whenever possible.
Однако такой модель может работать недолго и будет нуждаться в пересмотре.
However, such model cannot last long, and it has to be revised.
И наконец, и пока можно говорить о том, что вопрос преемственности власти Каримов собирается решить состоянием статус-кво властных полномочий.
In the meantime, we can say that regarding the question of the succession of power, Каримов is going to decide to maintain the status quo powers.
То есть Карим будет находиться у власти столько, сколько может, и его преемником станет тот, у кого больше властных полномочий и иных ресурсов в момент ухода нынешнего президента.
That is, Каримов will stay in power for as long as he can, and his successor will be one who has the most power and other resources at the time of departure of the current
president. Это обстоятельство указывает значимость поста премьера.
This indicates the importance of the post of prime minister.
Тем самым стоит ожидать, что на фоне ожиданий об обновлении верховной власти в Узбекистане интриги вокруг должности премьера будет стремительно нарастать. Спасибо большое.
We should expect that with regard to expectation about the update of the supreme power in Uzbekistan, intrigue around the prime minister will rapidly increase. Thank you very much.
И извиняюсь.
Sorry.
Спасибо вам, Камоладдин. I will ask the audience, I'm sure there are questions, to hold their questions until all the speakers have finished, and then I think we'll have some time for questions afterwards. So our next speaker is Shermamat Abdulazoda, who's an independent scholar. He's going to speak to us about Uzbekistan's economic and financial policies, a challenge to stability.
Assalamu alaikum, добрый день, good morning. Firstly, let me say thanks to previous speaker, Mr. Rabimov. It was very beautifully done. And then if you let me, I will let you know about some economic situation of Uzbekistan. Since I've been working for the government for last 2 decades, since 90s until 2004. So I begin my work, my career with the government sometimes in the beginning of 90s as advisor of Hakim of the Bagishamal region of Samarkand City. And then I've been promoted to the first deputy of tax inspectorate, Temeryul region of Samarkand City as well. After that, I've been transferred to the Minister of Finance of Uzbekistan, where I worked many, many years. Especially, I've been working with the tax policy of Uzbekistan. I was one of the authors who wrote tax code for Uzbek, new Uzbek government. And since 2002-2004, I was promoted to the job where is it's called in Russian Goznak. In Uzbek is Davlat Belgisi, Davlat Ishlab Chikarish Boshkarmasi. And in English, it's you can say it's Secretary of Treasury. I've been first deputy of Secretary of Treasury of Uzbekistan. So let me tell you something very interesting in the numbers. My speech is very different than previous speaker. I'm going to talk about the numbers and comparisons. Uzbekistan, regarding the reports of IMF, you can see Uzbekistan is one of the economically fast-growing countries in Central Asian or Eastern European area, which is average of 8.4% each year since 2008 and 2014. If we see well-known economically countries, for example, USA, United Kingdom, Japan, France, and other countries, if you compare them, IMF statistics numbers, it's from 1 to 3%. And then, which means Uzbekistan economy growing almost from 3 to 8 times faster than United States, United Kingdom, France, Japan. Uzbekistan also has currency exchange. Currency exchange is real or artificial. I think everybody knows that. So when Mr. Karimov became as a president of Uzbekistan in the early 90s, his one of the first books was published in Uzbek. It's known like 21-chi asr bosagasida, na porogi 21 veka, where he mentioned about the Uzbek style of economy, where he said Uzbekistan will have own structure, own Uzbek economy, own way to go in the future. And he mentioned that Uzbekistan any future has to have past. So at that moment, he mentioned Uzbekistan had its past, which was under the Soviet Union or communist regime. So since Uzbekistan became as independent country, a lot of investors, a lot of financial institutions, or a lot of foreign countries started interested in Uzbekistan economy, and they started investing huge amount of money. Most of the time, foreign investors became as bankrupt and kicked out from Uzbekistan. In 1990s, after closing down a lot of factories in Uzbekistan, a lot of people became as unemployment. As unemployment, there wasn't any official registration, official numbers. For example, a lot of manufacturers, it says in Russian, Zavod Kholodilnik, Kinab, Fabrika по производству чая, Лифтостроительный завод, и многие другие, other factories. Since then, a lot of people, a lot of citizens of Uzbekistan had to leave out of the country to find jobs to help the families to pay the bills. And they start going to neighbor countries, for example, Kazakhstan, Russia, Turkey, United Arab Emirates, USA, United Kingdom, and most European countries. In my very simple calculation, I can tell you, if in today's days, about 7 million people, citizens of Uzbekistan, who outside Uzbekistan in other countries making money and sending home back to Uzbekistan to the families money. Just simple example, if 7 million people send each month $100 to the families, it makes a year $1,200 per year, which is $8.4 billion comes to Uzbekistan. And then what is that makes, since in Uzbekistan using the foreign currency is illegal, so they have to go to exchange the U.S. dollar or whatever hard currency to the Uzbek currency. So, and they cannot go to the central bank course because that's too low, and they're going to the black market. That was the first step of Uzbek style of economy, which was promised by Mr. Karimov when he said, we will go to the future step by step. And I think I'm right. In my opinion, that was the first step. In Uzbekistan, also, budget, as everywhere else, government budget, and I do analyze most often government budget and how it that works. And then if you see all the spending money, you will see most amount of budget being sending to the military, including SNB, MVD, and others. And if you see for the social services, for example, for elderly people, for the people, for the family who have young kids, it's only about 3% of the budget. And also, I don't know, for some reason, each time in the budget, it has about 5% reserve money, reserve fund. And I apologize, this is 429,000. It's a mistake. Actually, I checked once again, it's 149. Officially, 149,000 people unemployed. It's officially number, but unofficially, and I think 7 million people who is the outside of Uzbekistan, that's also unemployed people. That's why they had to leave Uzbekistan to find a job in different countries. So if we look, 149 people, it's about 60%, and 18 million people is the who is the in the age of who can work. From the total population, 30.7 million people, it's 60%. So about 45% population who can work, and then 149 people of the 30 million, it makes 0.5, it's barely 0.49% from the total population. So it's absolutely unbelievable. If everybody knows that even in United States, its average of unemployment right now, it's over 5-6%, it's normal. In Uzbekistan, I don't think Uzbekistan is a very cheap country where to live. I think it's a super expensive country to live. And everybody knows how much it costs food, clothing, and anything else. For that reason, someone from any families, one or two, at least one person who had to leave and make money from the outside the country and send to the families. So as I mentioned, Uzbekistan, officially from the official course, for the entry-level jobs, they're making about $20-$30 per month, and then high-level jobs, they're making, I believe, $200 to $300 per month. So that's why I can tell you, and I can mention once again, this is a super expensive country to live. I have to tell that personal income tax is 22% for last few years, and it's very nice. It's actually, compared to other countries, it's a low rate. But isn't it already taking from people's money as much they wanted, or I would say they didn't give enough salary, whatever they deserve to get for their jobs? Uzbekistan is one of the countries which is has own natural resources, gas, and then cotton, gold, and other things. And if we calculate each thing to the currency, to the money amount, it makes a lot of money in billion dollars, which is we cannot find see on Uzbek government budget income side. Unfortunately, Uzbekistan selling to other countries electricity, for example, even though they're selling, except Tashkent, the city of Tashkent, all the regions have problem with electricity, have problem with the water or gas. Uzbekistan sells outside, bringing money inside, but do not taking care of the Uzbek citizens. And water, if they being given only by hourly, sometimes early morning, whoever can take it, they can get the whatever they want to put the water, so and then after that is done. It's not all. Again, no gas. People had to use the wood or charcoal to make a hot and warm family. Family have elder people or young kids, and they don't know how to use the way get the water, enough water for the laundries. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm going to tell about my experience when I was working at the Minister of Finance. So, and I can tell some about a little bit if I have time about the currency exchange. Currency exchange in Uzbekistan doesn't exist normally. Currency exchange is like not coming from the market. Currency exchange is being written number by the government. It's Minister of Finance making a number for the next week or next day, and it's going to the cabinet minister, and after cabinet minister with the Mr. President. After Mr. President's okay with that number, it's coming back to the Minister of Finance and Central Bank and to the market. So in this way, it's going to be next day's morning market price for the foreign exchange market. And foreign investors have a lot of problems with the current exchange. Foreign investors being promised when they brought a lot of money to Uzbekistan economy, they've been told you will be guaranteed to the exchange in official exchange rate. But most of the time, they cannot exchange Uzbek sum to the U.S. dollar to return the any loans or other expenses which needs to be paid in hard currency. That's why most of the time foreign investors had to buy some of the portion of the needs in hard currency. They have to buy from the commercial rates, which is much higher than official rate. So besides that, Uzbekistan, everybody know, it has a black market of exchange where is the super high level of the rates, which is in the beginning I mentioned that in Uzbekistan, in my opinion, each year more than $8 billion comes just from nowhere, from the people who work outside Uzbekistan, they sending, that makes black market. And under the behind the black markets also some of the government high level positioned people stays there and controls that. So if you see foreign exchange rates, you will see the there is no change at all. All the time, almost about 3-4% changing each time. Almost the same line. There is no zigzag. It's supposed to be in the market economy. It's almost line, straight line. It's just written numbers. They even know when they're making up the numbers, they don't even think how to make to look real. I think I think they need to be a little bit challenged. And a couple years ago, I read the information, a representative of the World Bank being in Uzbekistan come back, and she wrote the report, and she said Uzbekistan growing fast, it's significantly high, this is the beautiful, everything is okay. And I know Uzbekistan's style of making the reports. I know Uzbekistan's style of meeting the guests. And I do know how it's that makes. When you come to Uzbekistan, you don't need to know everything. You don't need to know anything. You will come as a guest. They will meet you. They will greet you as supposed to be high-level VIP guest. They will take care of you. And they will give you draft of the your report. So that was the one of the reports which is poor lady didn't see even, and she reported. And I sent to her email. Unfortunately, I cannot say anything else. So I don't know if I have time, no?
1-2 minutes?
Okay, I didn't get the chance in the beginning. Thanks. Marlene for inviting me to this workshop, and then it was unexpected as well, and I'm very glad to be here. I'm very glad to see all of you here, meet new friends, and some of the friends I met somewhere else before previously. So if you guys have any question, I will be more than happy if you send me email. I can answer to you officially to your email address if you give me your email and names. Right, I think so far it's okay. Thank you so much. And
thank you very much, Alex. Our next speaker is well known to anyone who's been working in Uzbekistan for some time. He is Timur Dadabayev from Tsukuba University in Japan. He will speak to us on the topic soft power from below, coercion and concessions in foreign policies of Japan, China and Russia towards Uzbekistan from a comparative perspective. 15 minutes, please.
Yes, yes, I will be very short. Thank you very much, Marlene, and everyone who contributed to this event. You know, I'm very thankful for your invitation. And I've been living in Japan for the last 20 years, and we run the Central Asia program in the University of Tsukuba, which is very close to Tokyo. And every year we recruit young students, not only from Uzbekistan, but from Central Asia in general. And our purpose is to actually make younger scholars visible in terms of discourse, academic discourse, because it is very unfortunate that in recent years we see that we don't actually have too many scholars from Central Asia writing on various issues in Central Asia. So in that sense, I'm more involved in academic research, and I try not to take sides, and we normally try to explain what we see as opposed to tell the people what we think is right, because to be frank, we don't know what is right. We just, analyze what we see. Now, talking about the, foreign policy, I realize that panel is very diverse, so I'm not going to make it, too complicated. My talk is going to be, consisting of four major parts, but very short ones. The overall goal of my presentation is I seek to answer two basic questions. And what are the motivations of Uzbekistan in engaging China, Russia, and Japan in its foreign policy? And secondly, is it possible to entertain a hypothetical assumption that Uzbekistan's strategy in achieving its goals with these powers is partly related to exercising something that we call soft power? But normally we used to apply this notion to great powers. In my research, I'm trying to look into whether Uzbekistan actually is in its foreign policy is trying to seduce greater powers by using soft power, but in a different manner. And again, I have to say that, you know, none of the conclusions that, and assumptions that I'm going to be talking about are final, and, you know, I'm very much looking forward for any suggestions and discussions. Now, before I go into the essence of my sort of presentation, you know, I have to emphasize the fact that, you know, I'm focusing on Asian powers, and I'm not looking into Uzbekistan's relationships with the United States or Europe. The reason for that is that, you know, in the recent years in the literature, we actually have seen that relationships between Uzbekistan and U.S. or European Union have been actually paid a very heavy coverage. On the other hand, you know, we actually don't see much in terms of coverage of Uzbekistan's relations with Japan, South Korea. We've seen some coverage in respect to China, but only confined to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And we don't see much in terms of analysis about relationships between Uzbekistan and Russia. And so these are the countries that I'm looking into. And the reason why I'm looking into these particular countries is that we have to admit that, you know, the center of economic growth, the growth of population, actually shifted from the West towards the East. And it is very unfortunate that in recent years, actually, countries of Central Asia, including Uzbekistan, do not actually see that particular trend. And they keep connecting their future to the potential relationships with Europe and the United States, although we actually see that economic growth and, you know, financial resources are mainly coming from the East. So, and that is the, you know, the aspect that I think is being neglected, and I think we should pay more attention to that. Now, talking about, well, the next point that I'm going to cover is what are the motivations of Uzbekistan in engaging China, Russia, and Japan? And I'm going to be very general. If you have some particular questions about some particular country, please, ask me later, and, you know, I would be more than happy to answer. But in my research, I argue that, China, Russia, and Japan's involvement in Central Asia have actually had paradoxical and contradictory impacts, which have elements of, on the one hand, decolonizing, but on the other hand, neo-colonizing. So they have both impacts. While Russian initiative or Eurasian initiative have some elements of appeal to Uzbekistan, Uzbekistan actually displays duality in the attitude towards this initiative, expressing interest in economic aspects while rejecting elements which go beyond economy. In this sense, China-led Shanghai Cooperation Organization has actually much more appeal to Uzbekistan because it is mainly associated with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's, you know, anti-colonial and anti-imperial initiatives and nature. By offering an alternative to the existing infrastructure networks, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and China, as one of its driving forces, offer the diversification of economic relationships and thus new opportunities for the smaller Central Asian states, including Uzbekistan, that used to be actually confined with the old Soviet structure, with all of infrastructure, you know, related to Russia, is being challenged. While this type of anti-colonial and anti-imperial identity is contributing to Central Asian development, by its nature, it is a negative identity building because the process negates influences of United States, Europe, Russia, and does not actually offer much in terms of positive identity, construction. Another point that, you know, must be pointed out here is that the process is the perceived image of regional powers such as China by the Uzbekistan or other geographically smaller countries. As has been stated, anti-Russian sentiments are fueled by the Central Asians' past experiences of the Soviet Union and Russian imperialism, while with respect to China, there is a concern about Chinese expansion and eventual domination, not immediate one, but, you know, in the longer term. Over the last years, plans for several ambitious projects have been articulated, including the creation of common economic space and Shanghai Cooperation Organization's bank and energy club. Similar ideas have been put forward by Russia for Eurasia. Yet if the principles and goals of these new initiatives do not serve the interests of Central Asian countries, including Uzbekistan, it is very likely that in the day will be perceived as facilitating Chinese and Russian interests and not the ones of Central Asia. In respect to Japan, what unites Japan and China in this particular sense is the attempt to see and place themselves in the position of strategic partners for regional states. Such attempts reflect the adaptation of their foreign policies towards proactive engagement in the international arena and the newly formed externally oriented identities. However, the reasons that these countries exert such efforts are different. For China, the reasons include security concerns, the economic motivations, which are connected primarily to energy resources and transportation networks, and these interests have predefined the direction of the Chinese foreign policy in this region. For Japan, the motivations are less clearly defined. Japan's interest in the joint exploration of and transportation of energy resources appeals to be the only clearly articulated goal of Japanese foreign policy in this region, and we don't actually have any other, expressed intentions. The other incentives for Japanese engagements in the region are explained by the notions of facilitating human development, human security, human rights, international security, but these are very broadly defined, and that actually leads to the inefficiency of the Japanese policy in this region. Now, the last point, you might think about, how all of this is related to the notion of the soft power from below. According to the NAI, the notion of soft power rests on three resources: culture, political values, the foreign policies, which are legitimate and are seen as moral authority. Nye also suggests that seduction is always more effective than coercion, and many values like democracy, human rights, and individual opportunities are deeply seductive. According to the Nye, the primary currencies of soft power are an actor's values, culture, and institutions. So when we think about a country like Uzbekistan, and when we think whether it possesses the culture, policies, and institutions which might seduce greater powers, I argue that Uzbekistan actually has these elements, but they are very different from what Nye actually interprets. Taking into account these notions, I argue to make an inquiry about applicability of soft power tools by smaller states like Uzbekistan vis-à-vis larger counterparts like China, Russia, and Japan, we can actually say that, that all three components mentioned by Nye can be applied in seducing these three countries. Culture component is used to find common ground to be understood in relations to China and Japan, that is, being Asian, being developing, and doing things in a similar manner. So it's a different interpretation of culture, and Nye himself in his research actually suggests that he doesn't claim to have a universal interpretation of culture. So if we change the interpretation of culture, then we can actually say that Uzbekistan actually uses this notion of being Asian and doing things in a different Asian manner when approaching China and Japan. While with Russia, Uzbekistan actually uses the Eurasian cultural heritage as the notion which unites interest and always depicts any other country as the other, which is different from Eurasian identity. In terms of political values, Uzbekistan very skillfully succeeded in framing its political orientation as anti-colonial and anti-imperial, which it often plays against Russia and sometimes against China in order to gain concessions from the West. It can also play the same notion of being anti-imperial and anti-colonial in respect to the United States, as we have seen in 2005 after Andijan events, when any calls for democratization have been claimed to be neocolonial. So in this sense, it's not the values of democracy or human rights, but rather Asian values, collective human rights, and anti-colonialism, which unites and serves as the backbone of the Uzbekistan's foreign policy in its application of the notion of soft power. And this, in turn, leads to a foreign policy of Uzbekistan, which sometimes is described as personalized and unpredictable. It may be so. But nevertheless, anti-colonial framing plays well for Uzbekistan. And when needed, such anti-colonial stance is played well against Russia, United States, and China in order to gain certain support from those who display sympathy. And the final point, again, I mean, I understand that many of you are more interested about policy implications, and I am more concerned about the theory. So when I think about, this nice notion of soft power, I think that, while Nye claims that his theory does not contradict realism, but rather offers description of another side of power, I argue that it further, if further developed and properly defined, the notion of soft power can well fit the constructivist rhetoric, and that, all relationships of Uzbekistan with other countries can be better explained by constructivism, that they are socially constructed in different situations, than realism, which is the primary theory which is now being used to explain foreign policy of Uzbekistan. That would be the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Timur. Our final speaker is Fakhmeddin Fazilov. He is a research scholar from New York University, and he will speak about Uzbekistan-China energy cooperation, impetuses, and impacts.
Yep. Good morning, everybody. Before I start my presentation, I would like to thank Marlene and Ashley and other staff for organizing this interesting workshop and inviting me here. I'm going to talk about China-Uzbekistan energy cooperation. It's a kind of logical continuation of the Dr. Dedebayev's presentation, but with the focus on a specific sphere energy cooperation between China and Uzbekistan that has been growing significantly over the past decade. I would like to start with some background of development of political and economic relations between China and Central Asia, because Uzbekistan's vector is seen as part of China's policy towards the region. Historically, Central Asia has been a key region for China's economic policy. It's been interrelated to China, as we know from the history, via Silk Road. And by developing maritime roads, Central Asia has become isolated from the trade and cultural relations with China. And this isolation has continued until Tsarist Russia and later USSR's period, when China started to deal with Central Asian countries via Moscow. The demise of the USSR has enabled China to reemerge its relations with the now independent five Central Asian countries and Uzbekistan directly. And we can differentiate these relations developed in two phases. First one, passive or so-called cautious phase. Until the first half of 1990s, China pursued its political interests cautiously towards Central Asia and Uzbekistan in particular, and its concerns over the security and stability in its western provinces were central. Whether it saw nomadic warriors, early Khanates, rapidly expanding Russian Empire, or consolidated Soviet state, China has viewed the Central Asian region as a source of chaos, political instability, and potential invasion. The demise of the Soviet Union has created a trepidation atmosphere among political establishment in China that this downfall of the system may affect political situation in China's western areas. Addressing three major threats has become very crucial in China's policy towards Central Asia. They are terrorism, separatism, and extremism. It was a result of religious extremist groups' activities in the region, such as Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, with its connections to the East Turkestan Movement, and preventing of which was impossible without cooperation with Uzbekistan. To address these new threats to peace and stability in the neighboring areas, China has initiated a formation of political structure, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, before it was Shanghai Five Group. The next phase we call as active or may so-called aggressive phase, when China's active policy towards Central Asia and Uzbekistan in particular came out from its geoeconomic interests, also interacted with security concerns in the region after 2000s. One major impetus to this change was China's unprecedentedly high level of economic growth, which demanded more energy to fuel its rising economy. And Central Asia having abundance of oil and natural gas resources, and with Uzbekistan in center, started to appeal China. As for Uzbekistan, it has reserves of 65 trillion cubic feet of proven reserves, ranking this country the fourth highest in the Eurasian region and the 19th in the world. Second major impetus for China's shift towards Central Asia was 9/11 events, which altered the world security architecture, especially in Central Asia, and China had to react to changing balance in the region, where the United States entered into the active military operations in Afghanistan with its military bases in Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. Also, as a result of military operations in one of the major oil suppliers in Iraq, and the ongoing sanctions in Iran, energy supply to China was disrupted, and Beijing started to rebalance energy security policy, focusing on other energy-rich areas, especially in Central Asia. Let's see how developed the political relations between China and Uzbekistan. China established diplomatic relations with Uzbekistan on January 2, 1992, and chronology of official visits, as you can see here, China welcomes Uzbek leader here, was very regular. The Uzbek leader visited China 92, 94, 1999, 2001, 2005, 2008, and China's president, Jiang Zemin, in 1996, Hu Jintao 2004, 2010, and the recent president in 2013. And their positions in international and regional, on regional and international issues mostly match. And China shows its complete comprehension of Uzbekistan's concerns on the rational use of water and energy resources in Central Asia. If we see the intensified China's energy policy in Uzbekistan, we can highlight the impetus that will show that China's demand for energy is growing and will grow. It became a net importer of oil products in 1993 and net importer of natural gas since 2006. And with the vast amount of reserves, high rates of economic growth, around 8-9% annually, and huge demand for energy, China started to reach stable resources of energy in Central Asia region due its abundance of petroleum, natural gas, uranium, and other natural resources. Geographic proximity and relative stability became prominent vector, especially in the world when the prices in international markets were volatile. Energy resources in neighboring regions are also offer the best available option for China to reduce its dependence on the Gulf and help avoid the Malacca dilemma. And transportation from these countries is land-based, short, and relatively secure. So to access energy sector in Uzbekistan, China has initiated to build Uzbekistan-China gas pipeline as a part of Central Asia-China gas pipeline. And starting 2002, Uzbekistan started to transport natural gas with the annual about 10 billion cubic meter of natural gas annually. And as we know, most of energy companies in China are state-backed, government-backed, like CNPC, CNOOC, Sinopec, PetroChina. They're very active, and these companies are pushing energy diplomacy of China in Uzbekistan now. And it should be mentioned that these companies are making targeted and sometimes unbalanced investments in energy sector of Uzbekistan, having shares in established joint ventures with the local state companies. They are pretty active in developing, exploring new energy resources in various areas of Uzbekistan. As Edward Cho, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said that China is playing a very long game, and it costs nothing to say, "I'm happy to take your gas." So we can see here. Here's the Central Asia China gas pipeline. And Uzbekistan-China pipeline. I may note that the bilateral trade between China and Uzbekistan has grown since 2000 in very high levels. Here you can see how this chart changed in the bilateral trade. And the number of joint ventures, about 482, including 78 companies with 100% Chinese investments, were established in Uzbekistan. So this cooperation kind of paved the way to expand cooperation in non-energy sectors. We can see now China's investment in infrastructure, in building railroads, highways, tunnels, bridges like China-Kyrgyzstan-Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan Road, American Karshi Railroad between China National Technical Import and Export Corporation and Uzbekistan Temir Yollari. All these projects have been financed and still are financed by the government-backed Chinese Exim Bank. And recently, China started to establish technoparks in Jizzakh and with its affiliation in Sirdarya. And Chinese companies like Huawei, ZTE, are very active in communication sector in Uzbekistan. As Dr. Dadabai mentioned about the soft power, as a part of soft power, China started to play a role in education in Uzbekistan by establishing Confucius Institutes to teach Chinese in the capitals of Tashkent and in Samarkand, and promote learning Chinese languages and culture in Tashkent. Especially they opened in my alma mater, Tashkent State Institute of Oriental Studies, recently. If we see the impacts of this energy cooperation to other sectors, to political, economic, social development, we can see the pros and cons. The question will arise, what kind of further impacts of this intensive energy cooperation will have to political, economic, and social domains of the Republic of Uzbekistan? Are these targeted and balanced investments really serve to the mutual benefit. Let's see in the impact of in political sphere, expanding energy cooperation with China and the strategic partnership between Uzbekistan and China will enable Uzbekistan in maneuvering in its geoeconomic sphere in terms of also setting prices for energy between Russia and China, and the important thing here that the strategic partnership between China and Uzbekistan does not imply mutual military commitments between the two countries. China has a strategic partnership with Russia and the United States, that this element exists, but in partnership between China and Uzbekistan, there's no kind of commitment, which gives to Uzbekistan to focus on deeper economic and political cooperation. And one should note that Uzbekistan is interested to develop such kind of relations, but within the SCO, because Uzbekistan sees the SCO as an largely in the context of explicit and implicit balancing between the great powers in the region. The next one, economic impacts. What kind of impacts has in economic sphere this cooperation? Although Central Asia remains one of the most difficult regions in the world to do business, I think Chinese has already China has already known learned some experiences, as Marlene mentioned in her book, kind of Chinese model to do this businesses and relations. Although there were some criticism that this money can be used to strengthen political elite in these countries, but I think Uzbekistan should benefit from this cooperation and use these investments properly. If we see in social sphere, with the growing Chinese investments, Chinese labor migrants issue may become a matter of concern because state-backed companies are mostly hiring China from China skilled workers, and they are very competitive. And Uzbekistan has more than 4 million so-called guest workers, seasonal workers, working in Russia and Kazakhstan. And with the sanctions towards Russia, most of them started to come back to Uzbekistan. And I think, firstly, these projects should be directed to accommodate more jobs from the and hire more people, workforce from the local people. There were also some impacts to the domestic supply. In 2002-2013, there were some domestic supply disruptions, and some experts were skeptical that Uzbekistan promised to increase natural gas to 25 billion cubic meter when Uzbek Nefty Gas only produces about 70 billion cubic meter. And as for 2013, there were about 45 billion cubic meter was for the domestic consumption. And from the regional point of view, of course, China-Uzbekistan energy cooperation may impact to push China's greater policy, as we just recently been witnessed of so-called, you know, re-emerge of new Silk Road project, it may also impact that project to push to Central Asia and later on to Afghanistan. And I think for post-conflict Afghanistan, it would be very, very helpful. In my conclusion, I want to just focus that the United States drawing downing its focus to the region due to pulling out of its military from Afghanistan. Now we see Russia's economic situation due to Ukraine crisis. And China, with its growing economy, supposedly will keep its position in a nearest perspective. The leadership of energy-rich Central Asian countries, including Uzbekistan, can take advantage of these resources because as long as they are able to play off the external powers, especially Russia and China, which are creating access to these resources, they can will be one of will be one from which Central Asia states can only profit. Let me wrap up my presentation by saying whatever country, China or Russia, will become a main importer of energy resources from Uzbekistan, taking into account of non-renewability of these resources and kind of impacts of this exploitation into the environment, I think it should be first served to people to create more jobs, especially when a lot of, you know, as I mentioned, workers coming back from Russia, improve education, medicine, and develop social projects. And all these results will improve living standards of people in remote villages, towns, which ultimately will impact to the stability of the region, about which a lot of leaders are very concerned. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Fakhruddin. That leaves us a bit of time. I think we have a coffee break scheduled at 11 o'clock, but that's for 30 minutes, and maybe we can spill over a little bit into that coffee break if there are sufficient questions. So I'll open the floor up to questions from the audience now for our presenters. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. It's a very great session and very informative. My question is to the first speaker concerning the role of the regional leaders. And another question is on the possibility of the internal coup, because the speaker is assuming that the state and the leaders are a very firm institution. The institutions are made of people. And when, for instance, at the moment, Islam Karimov is a very skillfully giving access to resources to certain political leaders, and that's why he's keeping everyone happy and this country is being ruled more or less stably for the last 25 years. But what happens if somebody comes and he's not agree with what other guy who was appointed is doing and he's blocking the economic access to the resources? Do you consider another option, internal coup, and the role of the regional leaders? Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you introduce yourself?
Oh, my name is Daniel. I'm here with the Rumsfeld Foundation.
Да, давайте просто коротко, коротко.
Так, учитывая то, что власть держится, потому что доступ к ресурсам он обеспечен Исламом Абдуганиевичем, да?
Да.
Он позволяет всем вот этим игрокам более-менее получать доступ к экономическим ресурсам, поэтому они выполняют свою функцию. Но не учитывали вы третий вариант, когда будет дворцовый переворот, потому что тот, кто даже преемник, может прийти, если с ним не будут согласны. Ему нужно сначала распределить доступ к ресурсам между элитами, да?
Да.
Это не всегда очень успешно происходит. Во-вторых, роль региональных лидеров. Вы очень поверхностно озвучили роль двух ключевых личностей. Это премьера и первого вице-премьера. Но учитывайте то, что государство и институты, они образованы из разных людей и личностей.
Да,
и
я
это
понял.
Не как бы монотонная и моногранная вещь.
Да. Спасибо. Спасибо большое за вопрос. Значит, Узбекистан – это не Киргизистан. Влияние региональных, скажем так, политиков на республиканские очень низкие, во-первых. Во-вторых, попытки дворцового переворота или там представление о дворцовом перевороте со второго половины 90-х годов ни разу не было. Первую половину 90-х годов некоторые политики себе представляли. Были попытки, когда Каримов досрочно вернулся из Индии. И были сняты некоторые ключевые лица. После этого никакие попытки не были. Феномен Каримова и представление о нем в Узбекистане настолько мощный, политики об этом даже не думают, не мечтают. Сейчас для политической элиты Каримов устраивает большинство. То есть многие политики не хотят, чтобы Каримов ушел. Окей.
Thank you. First of all, I don't think that Uzbekistan is Kyrgyzstan, and there is no possibility of overthrowing the government at this stage. And politics of Karimov is so strong that all the people around him don't want him to leave because he keeps them happy. Since 1990s, there were not any attempt to overthrow the government, and there was only one time when Karimov had to return from India, and he had to fire some key personnel.
Также исключаю что-то подобное в Туркмении, когда Туркменбаши как-то странно умер, сердечный приступ. В Узбекистане такое невозможно. Есть несколько факторов. Вопрос личной, то есть охраны безопасности подчиняется исключительно Каримову. Я уже сказал, что в Узбекистане сформирован представление политической культуры Каримова. И уже все уважают. Так что, во-первых. А во-вторых, я сказал, что этим людям даются не только экономические ресурсы. Опыт управления, администрирования. У них есть огромнейшие команды и другие факторы. Так что я исключаю такие варианты.
It is not like Turkmenistan, for example. There are some factors which contribute to the security of Karimov's position because, first of all, his security system is very strong, and political cultural stability is provided by the president to the surrounding people. So it's not just economical resources, but other resources as well to make the other people happy.
Thank you. There's a question in the back. Please identify yourself.
Sure. Nalba Hori Mamula from the Voice of America. Thank you so much for all of your presentations. It's been really interesting to listen to all of you. I have one general question based on each one of your analysis. When we keep on talking about the elite, the ruling so-called, you know, circle in Uzbekistan, people who run the show, whether it's economy, political decision-making process, or energy, or various deals with the rest of the world, whether it's, you know, with China and Japan, Russia, the United States, European Union, who are we really talking about? Could you define in your own ways the elite of Uzbekistan? Who are the faces of the ruling, I guess, class in Uzbekistan?
Thank you. Who would like to answer?
The thing is, you know, we really have to differentiate between, you know, the presentations. because we have some people talking about political issues, and then we have, you know, international relations. As far as my presentation is concerned, it's more about government. And, you know, in international politics, we don't really look into, you know, personal sort of touch of, you know, how foreign policy is defined. So in my case, it's more a government, whether you like it or not. Thank you.
Coming from my presentation, elite who are people who are responsible for the economic complex in Uzbekistan, as well as in charge of conducting foreign policy, it would be, you know, from the president down to the ministry, cabinet of ministers, and the ministers.
Specific people who is in that position, who can run, who can make the numbers, who can control, who can dictate to anyone they want. That's the question.
Все решения. Естественно, все решения в Узбекистане, стратегические решения, принимаются Каримовым. Вопросы безопасности исключительно Каримов. Вопросы внешней политики – это исключительно курс или как бы единоличная, как бы скажем так, монополия Каримова. А есть некоторые отрасли, допустим, в некоторых вопросах очень сильны советники президента, в некоторых вопросах очень сильны министры. Допустим, вопросы экономики, вот раньше был государственный советник Голышев, он, его специфическая роль заключается в другом. И вот весь финансово-экономический сектор подчиняется Азимову. Сельское хозяйство, Каримов вообще не любит заниматься сельским хозяйством. То есть, очень просто, в Узбекистане власть жестко централизована, принятие решений жестко персонализировано.
In Uzbekistan, the power is very strictly divided. Everything is done. For example, Azimov doesn't like to deal with agriculture, so his area of expertise is finance. It used to be Golushev in the past, and everything is centralized and monopolized, basically.
I'm sorry, I have to defer to Marlene initially, then I'll come back to Sebastian and some of the rest of you, Marlene.
Thank you. I wanted to follow on that with a question connecting both the foreign policy and the domestic issue. Kamolidin, when you say that everything is very much centralized and personalized, I think we all agree. The point is, what is the legacy of a personalized regime? And I was wondering, can we say that in terms of foreign policy, Karimov has been successful enough so the day we'll be leaving the power, the foreign policy of Uzbekistan will probably not change a lot because the kind of framework that he built for Uzbekistan in terms of its soft power and its strategy in the region is kind of consolidated enough that it would make sense even the day Karimov will not be here anymore. My point is that if we compare Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, we see how, I mean, during years we have been saying that Kazakhstan has a kind of successful multivectoral policy, that Uzbekistan is more zigzagging, and now 2015 we see Kazakhstan being in difficult position because of the Eurasian Economic Union and the relationship to Russia, while Uzbekistan is in fact able to continue its own strategy. So my point is, what is the legacy of a personalized regime? On some elements it will change the day the person will leave, but on some element, maybe it's one of the legacy that will remain of Karimov, which is that Uzbekistan foreign policy will probably change almost no more, not only a little bit.
Во-первых, сравнение Узбекистана с Казахстаном не очень корректно. Население в два раза меньше, нефти и газа намного больше. Но в самом начале 90-х ВВП Узбекистана было намного больше, чем в Казахстане. Это факт, во-первых. Во-вторых, это две авторитарные модели с двумя мышлениями. И в Узбекистане более жесткий авторитарный режим с учетом очень многих факторов. Это не только Каримов, но и разные другие факторы. Почему Каримов очень тщательно скрывает свои скажем так, склонности по выбору своего преемника, потому что он очень долго сохраняет вот этот баланс. Премьер-министр и его первый заместитель. И год за годом вот этот баланс иногда немножко раскачивается. И политически элита всегда думает, кто будет преемником. А Каримов не нарушает вот этот баланс. Я думаю, что он в самом конце будет нарушать и будет кого-то назначить или оставить. Допустим, если... Извините, сначала переведите.
First of all, I don't think it's a good idea to compare two these countries to each other because the population-wise, it's there is a two times more population in Uzbekistan, and the GDP used to be way higher than in Uzbekistan as well. And authoritarian Uzbekistan has an authoritarian regime, and Karimov is very strategically keeps everything in balance. Prime Minister and Premier. For example, he doesn't want to openly say that this person has more options, more choices to be a successor or compared to the other one. He keeps that balance very carefully, and when it's time, he will say the last word in the last minute.
Почему скрывает? Одна из причин. Как только политическая элита узнает, кто будет преемником, все его оппоненты, вот потенциальные или реальные оппоненты возможного преемника, будут бросить свои ресурсы, чтобы его уничтожить. Это политические как бы реалии Узбекистана. Всегда так было. И тем самым Каримов, когда он может... Я так думаю, что начиная от 2017-2018 года, кто будет премьер-министром, я думаю, что вот этот человек будет преемником Каримова.
There is a reason for Karimov to hide his successor because the second he announces his successor, that successor's opponents will immediately try to destroy him. And I think that that's one of the reasons. And I think that in 2017 and 18 he will start choosing his successor and probably whoever will be a prime minister, that person will be the president.
Kyrgyz Bekanunov, Central Asian Consulting. My question is to all the speakers. How do you see the future of Uzbek-Tajik relations, which have been deteriorating for many years, although they have a great potential for mutually beneficial initiatives? Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kanon, for this question. From the my presentation subject point of view, China initiated and supported building the next line, it calls D line or fourth line of Uzbekistan-China pipeline, and this pipeline will cross the Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, which will give some, you know, impetus to maybe we can say re-emerge or, you know, to revitalize bilateral relations with Tajikistan.
Michael Lund, Management Systems International, consulting firm here in Washington. Trying to put together some of the various presentations. The first speaker, as been alluded, is putting the emphasis on the strength of the inner circle. The second speaker seems to be suggesting there are some faults and weaknesses in the way the economy is run. The other speakers were talking about the influence, to put it really crudely or broadly, of the Asian model, or at least a more centralized authoritarian approach to economic policy. But are there some contradictions, if I could use that word, in terms of the outcomes, the effects on the average person? The last speaker alluded to the influence of energy cooperation on improving situations in the villages. And there was a de-emphasis on the role of public opinion. Nevertheless, and this is not a advocacy of revolution or anything, but nevertheless, are there some possible problems that might arise from dissatisfaction, rising expectations on the part of a apparently unorganized mass of the population? And would the influence of what's going of watching what's going on in Russia and China in terms of the balance between regime power and alternative sources of power, is that something that would influence the perspective of the ruling group or some elements within it to start paying attention to the consequences for the average person?
You know, it's quite interesting. You know, the point that you're raising is, you know, probably relates to the model of development because, as we know, you know, President Karimov, at the outset of his, you know, administration, emphasized that, you know, it was the government who was the leading source of, you know, economic growth. And eventually it was supposed to produce a middle class which would lead economic liberalization. Yeah, this was the ambition. Now, in recent years, we see that, you know, this model didn't work quite well. We've seen that, you know, government actually was the, you know, the leading force, but it didn't produce the middle class. So we didn't actually see that. And we, on the other hand, we also see that, you know, that public opinion is quite critical in respect to state institutions. The level of criticism is different depending on the poll that you would touch. But, you know, in general, we see that, you know, the level of disagreement or, you know, disapproval rate of the governmental institutions is rather high. So that might be an indication that that the Chinese model did not actually quite, I mean, worked well for Uzbekistan, at least for the last, 20 years. If it, you know, if this, you know, model is going to be practiced from now on, and if it is going to produce the same kind of outcomes that we've seen in China, then probably it is going to lead to the, you know, wider support of population towards the government, then it's going to work. But if not, then, you know, I'm very skeptical about revolution and, you know, that kind of disruptions to the government, but I don't think that, you know, support rate of the government is going to increase. So we're still at the moment that we don't actually know quite for sure how, you know, what kind of model is going to work. If, you know, they're going to practice persistently the model that they've been implementing up to now, and if it is going to produce some kind of outcomes different from the last 20 years, then probably it's going to sustain, and then Chinese model is an alternative. If not, then probably they will have to look into some alternative models of development.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll take one more question, and then let you get some coffee. Sebastian?
Thank you very much. Sebastian Perouz, I'm working here at the Central Asia Program. I have a question to Mr. Abdulazadeh. Thank you very, very much for your presentation. I liked it a lot. You mentioned at the beginning of it several figures regarding the economic growth. My question is that when I think of Uzbekistan or of Turkmenistan, I wonder to what extent actually we can consider this so-called economic growth as reliable. I mean, regarding the opacity of the regime and how it manages its economy. First, it seems to me that it's very difficult to verify the figures provided by the political authorities in Uzbekistan. And second, actually, the figures provided by international organizations like the IMF or the World Bank are based on these figures which are provided by the political authorities. So I'm not saying, of course, that there's no economic growth, or the more that these countries are based on, the economy of these countries is based on raw materials and hydrocarbons, but... And you know, obviously, very well the situation there. And again, I mean, my aim is not to criticize what you said, but I'm just wondering to what extent these figures can be reliable. We can rely on these figures, and to what extent we can use these figures. I would be interested in having your opinion about that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let me start from the end. You said, can we rely on these figures? You mean by numbers which is but published by IMF and World Bank?
Yes, because they're first on figures based on what the political authorities say, but also on what the IMF and World Bank say, because these figures are based on what the political authorities
yes. As I noticed on my speech, every single report, even though it's published by IMF or World Bank, it's my personal opinion, it's being provided by the countries who does that economy. They providing IMF and World Bank with the numbers, that figures, which is most of the time they're using for to get the credential before international financial institution to be approved to get more investment, for example, in this case to Uzbekistan. If Uzbekistan does not going to show its growth in the world before the financial institution, no one going to trust Uzbekistan economy, no one going to bring to Uzbekistan any investments. So that's why Uzbekistan... some leaders, I would say, I cannot blame whole government, some leaders who are specifically changing all the numbers to be trustful and bring more money to Uzbek economy. And I'm going to give you one simple example. President of Uzbekistan, it's not entry level or middle level of position. He is the highest level in Uzbek government, in Uzbek country. 2013 in January, he did speech in cabinet minister regarding the 2012, ending of 2012. And he says, as the president of Uzbekistan, he says, Uzbekistan is growing year by year and everything is going well and well. And he gives example. In 2013, Uzbek citizens start eating 6 eggs more than 2012. Uzbek citizens start eating half a kilo meat than 2012. Isn't it level of president? Isn't president needs to say that in the cabinet minister meetings? That's the whatever he can tell. So if this is Uzbek president's level, I don't know what to say. So he is the economist. He's a well-known economist. He worked for... as economist many, many years before he became as a president of Uzbekistan. So managing economy, yes, it's managed by the Karimov. Every single number goes after being proved by Karimov. Even someone else before told about who... else, everybody is happy with the Karimov's regime, with the Karimov's ruling. I don't think so. Everybody's happy. Everybody have to pretend to be happy. They have no choice there. Only the one person, only the one leader who can say yes or no or any other things. All the others just being agreed with him. That's all. Thank you.
Actually, Timur wants to add to that.
No, I'm just. I would like to. You know, I understand that. You know, powers of Karimov are very. You know, all encompassing and all that. But you know, I really want to call upon my colleagues to be a little bit careful about these notions, because no person actually can extend. You know, his powers to that much. You know, because you know, basically physically, you know, any person with even with huge amount of power wouldn't be able to cover all the areas. So we really need to be able to argue that, you know, there are certain areas which are not under direct control of the Karimov, and there are certain areas which are. And so I just want to warn that, you know, we shouldn't be going to the extremes when we, you know, explain or describe these events. Thank you.
I'm going to bring this panel to a close, actually. We have about 10 minutes. I know there are a number of you who still have questions. I apologize. Feel free to follow the presenters around while they get coffee and ask them the questions directly. That's what we would like to encourage. I would like to thank all of our presenters for very interesting presentations. Thank the audience for their questions. And I hope we can continue this dialogue very shortly.
Thank you. Thank you.